What a dump. When I think of zombie takeout, I expected more.
Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, let's just get straight to this week's movie, which is from 2004, Howl's Moving Castle, getting back to the anime and finally getting back to some Miyazaki.
I know, you want to cut through all of the red tape that we usually put at the beginning of the show and get straight to the anime.
Well, that, and we just don't have any feedback this week.
Oh, all right.
And a little announcement at the end, but you know, we'll get to that later. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary sponsored by Aging. It's not for the young.
And also brought to you by Fire Demons. Siri can suck a dick. My house will be ran by a fire demon. All right, so we have this young girl working in her father's, well, her late father's hat shop. She's just going to waste her life away doing the family business, but you know, it's how things used to go back then. She's wandering the streets and gets accosted by some strange creatures.
Well, when... first she gets harassed by a couple of guards.
Yeah, that's true.
How but... saved her from that?
Oh, that's right. It wasn't the... Yeah, I was thinking of something else, I guess. That's right. It was the guards that she got harassed by that Hal came and... This mystery man...
And played White Knight with her.
Played White Knight. Almost wondered if he'd set it up. That's right. Then the strange creatures came and he rescued
to follow Hal, that too. And she kind of got stuck with him.
Yeah. And, but of course, there was a jealous stalker of Hal's who followed her and found where she was because, well, I guess they fancied each other. Who knows?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say this will be our only Warren Bacall movie.
It might be. Yeah, the cast of this is ridiculous. We'll get to that.
But Disney distributes Miyazaki stuff in the U.S., so they go for some heavy hitters.
Not fuck around, right. So they she casts a spell. I was going to say curse, but it's, I guess, a spell. Well, no, she called it a curse. She called it a curse. She's unable to talk about, which is, well, I guess that fits. She ages her by decades. I'm not sure exactly how many, but she's up there now.
They kind of suggest she's in her 90s.
Yeah, so she puts about 70 years on her, at least. And so she doesn't want to freak her family out. And who is this old woman? What have you done with our daughter? So she sneaks off on her own.
She doesn't want to scare her family, so she runs away.
Yeah. Which it's kind of, I mean, but I understand because, you know.
I get the panic.
Who are you? What have you done with our daughter?
I get the panic response, but logically, the family's going to be a lot more worried about you disappearing suddenly than suddenly turning old.
And so she's out in the wasteland, which a place nobody should be, apparently. But she's out there, even though she's like 90, and runs into her first companion, the Scarecrow, that she looks like he has a turnip head, so she calls him Turnip Head. And the Scarecrow actually manages to help her out quite nicely.
I love Turnip Head because he doesn't have a single line of dialogue in any language.
Right.
But they still give him a personality somehow.
Yes. He's very happy and bouncy and just, you know, it's just so anime, just the whole bouncing.
Yeah, yeah.
The bouncing Scarecrow. But he leads her to Howl's moving castle and helps her get in. And well, first they of course wonder how did she get there. But
that was not her beautiful house.
Right, right. This is not my beautiful wife. She poses as the cleaning lady and pretty much finagles her way in and gets in all of their good graces, except for maybe the fire, who's the one running the house.
Well, she makes a deal with him.
Yeah, she does. She takes advantage of that deal. But you know, what choice does he really have in the matter? Mm-hmm. She's there, she's cleaning. But then this war breaks out and things start getting ugly. Different powers want Hal's help. Hal decides to respond to one of the answers, which that was his mom, right? Or his mentor.
His mentor. She trained him.
Yeah.
Solomon. Madame Solomon.
Madame Solomon. Who that's where she picks up her Toto, her dog. And because I was kind of like, oh, where's the Lion and the Tin Man? And she needs a dog. And yes, that's where Toto is. I thought I'd do wonder if the Witch of the Waste, although I guess she's the Wicked Witch, of the Waste. She kind of is throughout the whole thing, honestly. Mm. Just thinking of herself and just taking Sophie's kindness. So there's this war, but he doesn't want to get involved in any of it because he doesn't want it to consume himself. And of course it's just an ugly war. He'd just rather see it over than prolonging it. But he really can't stay out of it because it's coming to him, you know. It's yeah. They're bombing things. It's a kind of a World War II aesthetic with the mm-hmm. same as if there were magic going on at the same time.
It's sort of fantasy mixing with steampunk.
Yes, yes, it is. And giving away too much of the ending, we almost don't want to say hilarity ensues, but
because it gets a lot more complicated. I was wondering how you were going to handle the plot summary, but that's a fair point to say hilarity ensues.
I mean, it's the general gist of the plot is that he is trying to end it and stay out of it at the same time, and she's trying to save him. And it just keeps going from there.
And the Witch of the Waste is trying to get his heart, and
right, the Witch of the Waste wants to get his heart back.
Madame Solomon is trying to draw him into the war at all costs,
and the kid just wants a family. Yeah, hilarity ensues. Yeah,
just taking it to the very beginning, because we start with the castle. And you hear castle, you think, you know, spires in a medieval castle. No.
Right.
This is a hobbled together metal and brick and wood steampunk monstrosity on chicken legs that hobbles around the countryside. And it is incredibly detailed. The thing I adore about Miyazaki's work is how fluid and detailed he gets. If nobody tops him in that respect.
Yeah, it's very it's there's simplicity to this, but yeah, it's very, you know, beautifully done mm-hmm. at the same time. Very old school, it feels, the whole look to it.
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's very pastoral, and there's, you know, magic, and it's these people, and it's pre electronics, pre technology in a lot of ways. You know, there's no, you know, electricity in the houses and such.
Right.
But it's very, very steampunk, and I'm always a sucker for steampunk.
Well, it's everything's ran by the hearth.
Yeah, yeah.
In this case,
well, in the castle, yes.
Literally. It's ran by the
right,
hearth.
Right, right. I didn't put that together. Nice catch. And the introduction of Hal, because it's been a while since I've seen the movie. I've seen it a few times. This is my second favorite, a very close second favorite of Miyazaki's work for me. And he seems really creepy at first when he's
right. You know,
rescuing Sophie from the harassing guards. You said it seems like he set it up. I didn't think of it in those terms, but absolutely, because he is total creepy white knight guy.
Right. I think, but in the end, he didn't. That was, you know, well, no, no, all it, that.
But he still has that persona. And it they wouldn't have shocked me
if they did figure, you know, if he had come off as arranging that whole thing. But no, he didn't. He really did save her. I think they modeled him off of Bowie.
Oh, that was, Bowie's definitely an influence.
Yeah, that hair.
Well, visually also, but the film is loosely based on the 86 novel of the same name by British author Diane Wynne Jones. So it's not, Miyazaki didn't create the story. He took certain liberties with it. He focused more on the war element. He was apparently very pissed off about the Iraq war the previous year, and this was in many ways a protest. So the message was very anti-war. Yeah. So you know, it was very changed, but I don't know if the visuals of how were changed per se.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if the original source was modeled off of Bowie, but
I'm very curious to read the book.
Yeah, I am too. Actually, I feel. Yeah, I just feel that.
Yeah, I definitely the animation see the influence,
model. Yeah. They were like, "Oh, let's just put Bowie in there."
he's kind of a Prince Valiant type.
Yeah,
he's the pretty blonde hair, you know, shoulder length, and at least when you first see him.
I'm thinking the Goblin King hair and stuff.
Okay, later on, yeah. When you first see him, he's got this like shoulder length, kind of bobbed blonde hair, and the bangs, and he's very Prince Valiant without the muscles. And the blob monsters. Some of the creatures in this movie are genius. The blob monsters, when they come after them, they're wearing straw hats.
Right.
Which is another aesthetic they brought in, like 20s US.
It reminded me a lot of The Prisoner, actually.
Yes, good call, good
call. The original Prisoner, where everybody was wearing those straw hats and that Gilded Age look. That who knew how terrifying that could be?
Yeah. And the chauffeurs for The Witch of the Waste. I'm calling her chauffeur. She had like a sedan chair, sedan coach that they carried her in. Top hats, tails, purple suits, but also kind of blobs with these faces that looked almost like plague doctor masks.
Right. Or, just very insectoid.
Yeah. Just loved how they blobs. Loved how they moved and kind of how fluid and kind of creepy they were.
Yeah. Nothing worse than an insect until you make them into a blob form. It's like, ooh, that's even worse.
And just the cast. Okay, let's break down the cast a little bit.
The cast is just ridiculous.
Christian Bale as Hal. Gene Simmons as Sophie, aged what? Sophie. And I mean J-E-A-N Simmons, the actress.
Not Rock All Night.
Not the bass player from
Party Every Day.
No, the actress, Gene Simmons.
I was kind of picturing him stamping around while he was talking like that.
Billy Crystal as Calcifer, the fire demon. I'm typically not
a understated Billy Crystal in this.
I'm typically not much of a Billy Crystal fan, but he's perfect for the role.
You know, his voiceover work is good, like Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, true.
You know, like him and John Goodman. That could have been a live-action movie easily with the two of them, actually. Yeah. Except he wanted to go for the creative, you know, look.
And he does kind of, in live action, tend to overplay a bit.
Yes.
And I think you kind of need to do that in voiceover. So it suits him.
Not our first Billy Crystal. Remember, we did Princess Bride
not that long ago. I think voiceover suits him for that reason, is because he has a natural tendency to overplay a bit. Christian Bale went the opposite. He just completely underplayed.
Yeah.
Which was brilliant for the role.
For Billy Crystal, that was very understated, you know?
For Bale, just completely underplayed Howl, which worked perfectly.
He should have talked like Batman.
And Lauren Bacall, I mean, perfect in anything, but perfect for The Witch of the Waste.
Good God, Bacall, Blythe Danner, just ridiculous cast.
That's what you get when you have Disney money.
Yeah. But someone that's looking to spend the money wisely and not just get stars to come in.
Right, yeah. They tend to do that with Miyazaki stuff. They go for people who are suited to the work, not the heavy hit, not the box office names of the day. Because
Christian Bale would have gotten some tickets sold for this.
Probably. But they don't sell them on the names of the American cast, because Miyazaki's already got a built-in audience.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to go to a Miyazaki film because they love Miyazaki's work. You're not going to sell Miyazaki to 12-year-olds, you know?
That's true.
And again, just speaking of the master Miyazaki, when Sophie first changes, when she first sees herself after she's been changed, the multiple angles of the mirror.
Yeah.
She's at this mirror with, you know, this one, I don't know what it's called, but it's like multiple mirrors in this display.
The Tim Gunn mirror. I don't know.
Yeah. It's kind of, they're kind of angled. And the timing between all of them was perfect. Showing these different angles and different movements. Loved that. And then, of course, she runs away because she sees what she's become. Odd choice. But she finds Turnipet. I love Turnipet. I mean, whenever you can give a character personality without any dialogue, it always impresses me.
Just this big, stupid grin. Just the bouncing around.
This is how much I adore Turnipet. I actually have a figure.
And then he like becomes heroic towards the end too.
He's always trying to help her.
But yeah, but he like almost sacrifices himself in the end. Is.
Yeah. And they just I don't know how you give a character personality without dialogue, but it amazes me. Also love Markle, the kid who works for Howl.
Yeah.
It's basically Howl's face. He's the face man. He's the one who is, you know, answering the door and booking everything. And he's a kid who is somehow a curmudgeon.
Trying to talk like Orson Welles or Raymond Burr or something. His little disguise. Yeah.
And even when he's at himself,
yeah,
he's just completely over everything.
Yeah. And then you see kind of a little kid coming out of him, like, you know,
just a little bit here and there. Stay.
Yeah.
But I always love curmudgeons, and to see a kid as a curmudgeon just kills me. And I loved the line. She's kind of messing with Calcifer. She almost puts him out trying to clean.
Yeah.
And I loved the line. I'd appreciate it if you didn't torment my friend. Because he just says it so low-key.
But I think that's a lot of the theme of this also is about age, you know. She's old, but I mean, she's really young and she's, you know, taking on the burden of being older, and then he's a kid, but he's acting like he's an old, you know, curmudgeon. Mm-hmm. And
we find out Calcifer or Howl, same kind of deal.
Right.
So yeah, they do play a lot with age. And I think as I'm getting older, I'm actually appreciating the movie more.
Well, yeah, because I mean, it's kind of frightening, you know.
Yeah.
Like, goddamn, what's gonna happen to us?
Right.
It's already happening.
And I just have to again geek out about the detail in Miyazaki's work because the bathroom. She's cleaning the house, and she goes into the bathroom, and it is just disgusting.
The multiple colors. Just all over the place. It was like something from something out of Mandy almost.
It's just completely run down and filthy and disgusting, and the detail is beautifully so. Also, when the castle is walking along the cliffs and she looks down, the sense of depth was terrifying.
And like the scene where he takes her to the flower fields, it's just, he just went to town.
Yeah.
Like, how long did it take to even put that stuff together? It's just, well,
it is a lot amazing. Of CG. A lot of it is computer generated. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not all hand drawn. I was a bit disappointed to read that, but you can tell particularly with the castle, that has to be CG.
Yeah.
There's no way to get that kind of detail and that kind of movement in Cell. So yeah, it was a lot of computer generated stuff, but it's still beautiful art.
It still looked beautiful, which I guess is what the important thing is in the end.
Yeah, and speaking of going whole hog, we get this great contrast between the castle at Star Lake, this beautiful idyllic setting, and then Howl in bird form flying over these burning houses, you know, fighting in the war. There's this amazing contrast. I'm wondering though why she reverts back to her youth here and there.
It had to do with her emotions. Although, swear, when he was looking in on her when she was sleeping,
being that was
the first
again.
Time we see her young.
Yeah, since the beginning, right?
Yeah, she's suddenly young again.
Because he's being a creeper and watching her sleep.
but and, it's just like, you know, a brief we see her, thing.
But yeah, she reverts apparently, because that's the first time we'd seen her sleep. She apparently reverts to her original age while she's sleeping. And then, yeah, as she falls more in love with him, she starts looking younger. And I just loved how his, you know, kind of tough guy, not tough guy in the macho sense, but kind of together, you know, unemotional facade was just shattered the minute something went wrong.
Like, yeah, his whole thing was that he was walling himself off from everything as much as possible. Yeah. And there's only so much that could last.
She messed with this potion somehow. Maybe just she just rearranged them. So he apparently used them in the wrong order and his hair turned orange and he just becomes this pathetic mess. Just completely loses his shit over orange hair.
Which could have very well been another Bowie reference because he had the spiders from Mars.
Yeah, right. And then Calcifer, was it Calcifer or Markle? I think it was Markle mentioned that he lost it again. He had previously lost it like that because a girl dumped him.
Yeah.
So he is just this pathetic man-child who was trying to put up this front. I loved that.
Yeah, he's really a teenage boy at heart because that's when he lost it. Yeah.
True. He literally turns into slime while having a tantrum. I loved the line. One of my intros. I'm such a big coward. All I do is hide. And this magic is just to keep everybody away. I can't stand how scared I am. It's beautiful self-awareness in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
It's a little on the nose, but just to have him show that kind of sudden self-awareness, I loved. And then he convinces Sophie to go to the palace for him because they want an audience. They want basically when I try to talk him into joining the war or stepping up his efforts in the war. He convinces her to go as his mother alone.
Right.
And I loved the dog.
Right. The dog.
She's just followed by this adorable little dog the whole way.
Yeah. The dog actually like makes, you know, helps her at points. Mm-hmm.
And
she assumes it's him.
Right, yeah. She assumes the dog is Howl. It's not. I loved how she got to the stairs and the dog couldn't climb the stairs, so she had to carry it.
They're having this race up the stairs, her holding the dog.
And the Witch of the Waste just trying to walk up the stairs because she's that big. And I loved that her chauffeur is melting because there was some kind of charm at the gate where, you know, you had to walk in. So, yeah, they're trying to... And, you know, they're initially racing, but then the Witch of the Waste just gets worn out. And I loved Sophie at the top of the stairs just kind of cheering her on. And the zoetrope effect, treatment or whatever it was done to the Witch of the Waste was incredible.
Yeah. And they kind of revert back to that a bit when they...
With later with Howl, they show the
same with Howl, yeah.
And then we get some backstory, which was very nice. Because Howl's kind of an enigma.
Yeah.
So we get some backstory about how Madam Solomon trained him and he was going to be this great wizard. And then he made a deal with a demon, which is contradicted later in the film, unless he was training very young.
Well, I don't think he was I don't think he was actually a demon in the end.
Well, no, that she says demon and he refers to himself as a demon. He was more of a falling star.
Right.
Yeah. So, she says he made a deal with a demon. And this is a slight spoiler. I don't know if it's not hard to spoil this movie because it's just so beautiful. It's, you know, you're not going to lose anything knowing what's going to happen going in. You're not going to lose a lot. But when Hal was a boy, he merged with Calcifer.
Yeah.
That is presumably the demon Madame Solomon was talking about. But I don't know if he would have been training at that age. I guess maybe even Jedi train young, so maybe wizards do in this world.
Yeah, they don't really say if he'd start training in the flashback.
Right.
Or not.
Uh-huh. But I loved the flashback. It was so trippy.
Oh, yeah.
this beautiful, idyllic field of grass just disappears below Sophie at one point into a black hole.
And yeah, she's just floating in it.
We get the zoetrope again and the shooting stars, and it was just hilarious. It was just beautifully trippy. Loved the Japanese chanting music. Really reminded me of Akira.
Now, of course, the scene that really puts this over for me is the scene where the castle collapses.
Yes. It's kind of the last stage of Howl's evolution.
Yeah.
Because the castle was his refuge.
But just the technical way that it was visually done.
Yes, yes, it's stunning.
My jaw literally dropped. Yeah, yeah. It was just like, holy shit. Every little piece. I mean, there's no like ruffle cloud or anything. Right. You see every piece just...
And they kind of give you a hint of that kind of animation later when they move it.
Yeah.
Because the house just radically changes. It just basically, it just redesigns itself in front of your eyes. That was beautifully done. And then later we get the destruction of it. But there's just some other great animation moments. When Sophie sees her room and then just changes right in front of you. She de-ages.
Yeah.
Just beautifully, smoothly.
Right. She de-ages and ages in a lot of shots. Yeah, that really makes it interesting.
And she doesn't, like, they don't have her turn around to do it.
Right.
It just happens right in front of you. Which was great. Also loved that the Solomon's dog ended up defecting with them. they have to run away from Solomon. They take the Witch of the Wastes with her, who has now lost her powers, and the dog decides to go with them too.
And at first you think the dog is there as a spy, but nope, the dog just along for the ride.
Though I have to wonder if Bird is Howl's true form.
I don't know. I thought it was a very nice manimal reference.
Okay. Is that what he naturally looks like, or is he more human? Because Calcifer says at one point, the more you change, the harder it will be to turn back into a human.
Hmm.
So, and it seems like when he was distressed, he turned into a bird.
Yeah. It could have been that he just changed into it so many times that he's lost his humanity.
Hmm. Loved the battleship designs too.
They're very weird, the ship designs. These
flying behemoth battleships, steampunk behemoths. I was kind of shocked that the bomb actually went off when Sal was trying to rescue Sophie from it, though.
Yeah.
Because the bomb's dropping pretty much right on top of her.
Yeah.
He dive bombs to try to stop it. It hits anyway. You don't expect that to happen in this kind of movie.
Just all sorts of disaster there.
One of my few very, very minor criticisms, though, aside from the one line being a bit on the nose, is Hal saying, explaining, basically, we're getting to Hal's evolution and how he's, you know, learning to exist for more than himself growing up. He says she's trying to stop him from going back out into the war. And he says he has to because now he has something to protect. And then he has to throw in, it's you. Like, we didn't already know that.
I guess for something like this, though, you have to be, you know, you have to kind of spell it out.
Yeah, I guess. It's interesting because Miyazaki stuff is often geared toward kids.
Yeah.
But I feel like this one is more, has an older demo. Like, I don't think this is a kids movie, per se. I think this one is geared more towards adults. So,
I think he left it open. You know,
it's certainly appropriate for kids, but I don't think a kid would really fully appreciate it, except maybe on a visual level. I do think, and you know, it is a fairy tale, but I think the ending was a little too convenient. They just kind of wrap everything in about 5 seconds.
Yeah, I don't know where it could have gone after that. Once you,
there's nowhere else it could have gone. War. I mean, you know, the war. Well, the castle is completely destroyed.
Yeah,
it's a plank on the legs at that point. and they've taken the curse off of Turniped, she's completely back to being young, except with gray hair. Hal's been resurrected and given back his heart. It's just. That's the natural ending. It just all kind of happened in about 5 seconds at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I don't know how else they could have done it though. You know, could they have?
True, and it's a very minor. It's not even a criticism. It's just kind of like
part of the story.
We're done.
Yeah, yeah.
Just happens a bit suddenly. On the sequels and remakes.
On the sequels and remakes.
I'd love to see this done live action.
Ooh, that's
a challenge. It's a challenge, but I would love to see it, and I would love to see Matthew Vaughn take a shot at it.
I mean, you lose kind of the visual appeal, I think, you know, that this film has the way it is.
I just don't want to keep saying don't touch it like I typically do with classic anime. Don't animate it. Nobody else should do an animated version of this.
Right, right.
And don't do an animated sequel unless Miyazaki comes out of retirement and wants to do a sequel.
Like, there's plenty of his other stuff that I wouldn't mind seeing live action. I'm kind of, you know, Akita, I'm kind of curious as to how that'll play out. But,
Well, I'm kind of curious because it's so challenging. I want to see if someone can pull it off.
But this, you know, this feels like this is supposed to be a cartoon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
It has that very old Hansel and Gretel look, to it. I'm trying to think of, like, the cartoons that I'm even thinking of from, like, the 60s or 70s that he's going for, but in a much more detailed way.
Because the characters are fairly soft.
Yes.
The backgrounds are insanely detailed.
Yeah.
Which is common with Miyazaki. But it definitely fits that style and that setting to have these kind of soft focus characters.
So yeah, I just couldn't see this as live action.
I don't know if I could see it. I just want to see somebody try it to see if they can do it. It's more the challenge angle.
Jack Black is Hal.
Yeah, I don't know. Hal was a tough call.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you give Billy Crystal Thompson for. He might be a little too old. Then again, he doesn't really age.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to Brains.
On to Brains.
It's Miyazaki, and it's my close second favorite Miyazaki, so obviously, I'm going 5.
I'm going 5 as well. It's such a. I don't know. There's so much. Such a heartfelt story that you know, feels original, you know? Mm. And yeah, I don't think it was just because it was a cartoon. It's supposed to be a cartoon, but I think they handle a lot of different themes very elegantly in this. Yeah. So,
all right. So, what have you learned?
Getting old is really worse than I thought. And I thought it was pretty bad in the first place, honestly.
See, but the theme of the movie is that she learns to appreciate getting older. You know, and that's what ultimately.
But she doesn't fucking stay old. She goes back to being young. This is true. She again.
And then she was the first to do the dyed gray hair thing.
Yeah.
It was a fad recently. I didn't know it went back to 2004.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm. And I learned that making a deal with a demon isn't necessarily always a bad thing. All right, so just a quick announcement. We're going to be very sparse over the summer.
Of course.
You've got some stuff coming up. So we're going to be, after next week, we're going to be taking, like, I think we'll just go with 4 weeks off.
Yeah.
Come back in mid-July, do a couple weeks, first 2 weeks of August off, come back in mid-August for 2 weeks. So up until September, there's like 5 more episodes, just
something
so you know.
Like that. Including our 400th.
Yes, that should be somewhere in August, I think.
Yeah.
And of course, that's it for Howl's Moving Castle. Until next time, when we'll finally be reviewing Saturday the 14th.
Wow.
Something to, you know, tide you over for the month off.
There.
Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.